This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
This Week with George Stephanopoulos starts right now.
Locked in.
Our plan is working. America's coming back.
Just put me back in office. We'll get it done quick.
President Biden and Donald Trump clinch their party's nominations as Trump makes new inflammatory remarks.
It's going to be a bloodbath for the country.
House Intelligence Chair Mike Turner responds, and our conversation with those so-called double haters, voters unhappy with both candidates.
I don't think any of us should have to continue to have this choice of the lesser of two evils.
Ticking clock.
This bill therefore forces TikTok to break up with the Chinese Communist Party.
The House overwhelmingly passes a bill that could ban TikTok in the U.S. as content creators fight to save it.
Members of the House of Representatives are so out of touch.
What's at stake for national security, and what's next for the wildly popular app? We'll ask Silicon Valley Congressman Ro Khanna, who opposed the bill. And sharp rebuke.
Prime Minister Netanyahu has lost his way.
Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer slams Israel's prime amid a deepening rift over the war in Gaza. The latest reaction from White House National Security Spokesman John Kirby.
From ABC News, it's This Week. Here now, Martha Raddatz.
Good morning and welcome to This Week. It was a week that began with President Biden and former President Trump officially clinching enough delegates to secure their party's nominations, setting up a November rematch that many Americans say they don't want. We'll hear from some of those dissatisfied voters. But we begin this morning with the latest inflammatory comments by former President Trump on the campaign trail. The contrast between the two candidates on clear display. And the general election is just getting started. Straight from his private jet to the podium, a freewheeling speech by former President Donald Trump last night in Ohio. It began, as many Trump rallies do these days, with a song by the so-called January 6th
Ladies
prison
and
choir.
Please rise for the horribly and unfairly treated January 6th hostages.
Made up of those serving time for storming the Capitol. Trump framing them as hostages, patriots.
You see the spirit from the hostages, and that's what they are, as hostages. The first day we get into office, we're going to save our country, and we're going to work with the people to treat those unbelievable patriots.
But that was just the beginning. Trump stoking more fear about migrants at the southern border. Trump at one point saying they're not people.
Well, I don't know if you call them people. In some cases, they're not people, in my opinion. But I'm not allowed to say that because the radical left says that's a terrible thing to say. These are bad. These are animals.
And while blasting the auto industry's foreign manufacturing and embrace of electric vehicles, the former president making this comment.
Now, if I don't get elected, it's going to be a bloodbath for the whole. That's going to be the least of it. It's going to be a bloodbath for the country.
A top Trump advisor taking to X to clean that up, saying he was referring only to the auto industry, writing that President Joe Biden's insane EV mandate will slaughter the American auto industry. The Biden campaign seizing on Trump's statement to accuse the president's Republican rival of threatening political violence and wanting another January 6th. And at an off-camera gala for the press last night, President Biden warning of what he called the toxic cycle of anger and conspiracy. Trump also directly attacked Biden throughout the speech, even saying this.
How about a couple of more indictments, Joe, you dumb son of a...
And I'm joined now by House Intelligence Committee Chair Congressman Mike Turner, who represents the Ohio district where former President Trump spoke last night. Thanks for joining us this morning. The former president was in your district campaigning for a Senate candidate that you do not support, but you have endorsed President Trump. What's your reaction to comments like that?
I think, first off, I want to congratulate you, Martha, that you correctly identified that the president's statements concerning bloodbath were about what would happen in the auto industry if actually the Chinese manufacturers who were coming into Mexico were permitted to import into the United States. Of course, I've read the transcript. As you said, I was not at the rally. But it is incredibly important that that be accurately portrayed. I think certainly there are statements that he makes that many Americans would not agree with, and many Americans would agree with it. When you talk about what's happening at the border, this is absolutely a crisis that's created by this administration. 8 million people have come across the border, almost the entire population of Ohio. Director Wray of the FBI saying that this absolutely represents a national security threat, that there are people who have come across the border who have ties to terrorist groups and organizations. We just last week had a hearing about this in the Intelligence Committee that was a public hearing, so the public could hear this threat.
But Congressman, I understand that. I understand the crisis at the border, and it's something we have covered again and again. I'm talking about former President Trump's comments calling them not people and animals.
Well, I, of course, have disagreed with those in the past. I think the American public disagree with those. But I do think that people see that Donald Trump is the only candidate in this race that's going to be able to fix this crisis. Joe Biden created the crisis at a border. We've seen nothing like it. 8 million people, his own FBI director saying it's a national security threat, that we have the highest threat of a terrorist attack in this country right now as a result of the people who come across that border.
Did you support the border package on the Hill?
No, I did not. It would not have fixed the problem at the border. In fact, it would have codified Joe Biden's policies allowing millions of illegal aliens to come in across the border every year.
I want to move on to another comment.
That's a result of Biden's executive orders. He opened the border, and it's his. He has created this crisis.
We could go over what President Trump did and President Biden did, but I want to stick to these comments for a minute, and just one more if we can. He's also called those who stormed the Capitol, and you heard that so-called January 6th choir. He's called them hostages and patriots. What effect do you think that has on his supporters? It was President Trump who wanted his supporters to go up on the Hill on January 6th. Does that have an effect on people when they hear those words?
Well, as you know, he did not call for the storming of the Capitol. And we have had a number of these cases that there have been questions concerning how those cases have been prosecuted and the individuals, where there have been cases even overturned. Now, you would think, of course, that Donald Trump would have very strong emotional feelings about the individuals who have been in jail and have gone to prison over these.
Do you support those comments? Are they hostages?
On January 8th.
Are they hostages or the patriots?
No, I don't believe they're hostages. I believe in our judicial system. And I believe, though, Martha, as you've seen, because you've reported them, some of these cases have been overturned. Some of the legal construct of the basis of a number of these cases has been overturned. This is going to be, a continuing legal process. And this president obviously has very strong personal views on this.
Let's move on to TikTok, and talk about your bill. That this is one area you defied Donald Trump on because he supports TikTok. That bill could potentially ban TikTok. You say it's a national security concern. I know you had that classified briefing. What can you tell us to make it more clear to Americans why this is a problem?
Sure. Well, Martha, I think, we have to first start with that China as a country is not like us. It's an authoritarian regime that has self-identified as an adversary to the United States. It has banned Twitter. It has banned Facebook. It has banned YouTube in China. It understands the power of social media and social media apps, and it certainly seeks in a number of illegal ways to obtain the data of Americans that it can use as part of its perpetration of this greater surveillance society that it uses to control its own population. President Xi stood next to President Putin in Russia, he openly stated to the world what his intentions were. He said that we, the two of them, are going to bring about change that hasn't happened in 100 years. That's the battle between authoritarianism and democracy, and that's certainly what we're seeing in China's both economic, its propaganda, and certainly its military buildup that is part of its self-declaration as an adversary of the United States.
Congressman, is there recent evidence that TikTok is sending a significant amount of data about Americans to China, to the Chinese government?
Well, you know, Martha, this what you see is a structural relationship for which there is not divisions. And there are great concerns about the individual privacy and issues of data between TikTok and the Communist Chinese Party. But what you have even more importantly here is that this is a propaganda tool. This, these algorithms, these influencing through social apps, being in the hands of a self-declared adversary of the United States, one that has banned TikTok, banned Twitter, banned Twitter, banned Facebook, and banned YouTube, understands the use of these tools to be able to manipulate a society. And that certainly is one of the greatest concerns that we have.
We just have a very short time here, but you had a lot of TikTokers up on the Hill this week, and TikTok apparently supports a minimum of 224,000 jobs in this country. What would you say to those Americans who might lose their livelihood?
Well, I don't think they'll lose their livelihood. They have obviously undertaken a livelihood that is communicating to people through social apps and social media. And this is not a ban on TikTok, as you know. This is actually a piece of legislation that requires that the Chinese ownership of TikTok be divested, so that we would sever that relationship between Chinese ownership, the Chinese government, the Chinese Communist Party, that is of such troubling concern. As you know, India has previously banned TikTok over the exact same concerns. These are concerns that as you look at what China is doing around the world, their propagation of a surveillance society, their even illegal means in which they're acquiring data on Americans and people around the world, their use of propaganda, their own banning of Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube because of their concerns of the voices of democracy being heard, you can see what a great concern this is to our country.
Okay, thanks so much for joining us this morning, Congressman. Always good to see you.
Thank you, Martha. Thank you.
So let's bring in Democratic Congressman Ro Khanna, who represents Silicon Valley and voted against the TikTok bill. First of all, Congressman, welcome this morning. But I also want to ask you why you voted against it. I know you've said First Amendment concerns.
Martha, look, there are two national security issues that proponents of the bill have cited. Both are legitimate. One, will the data get to a foreign government, in this case, the Chinese Communist Party? Two, will the Chinese Communist Party have an influence on algorithms? We can deal with both with a narrowly tailored law. Let's ban any data going to a foreign country and protect American data. Second, let's ban any foreign interference in a social media app, whether that's TikTok or another app. And by the way, those laws would also cover data brokers, which are selling data to Chinese companies. So this bill is not actually addressing the issue. 71% of Americans want to protect data privacy. Only 31% want a ban on TikTok. Congress, A, doesn't understand, in my view, all of the social media and how it's working, and B, is out of touch with what the American people want.
How do you do that? Get more specific about what you say, banning. What does that all mean, and how does that work? We don't always know what's going over there or what's being taken.
Martha, I think some of the facts would be helpful. So TikTok is owned by ByteDance. ByteDance is a Chinese company. It has 60% international investors, including KKR and General Atlantic. Three of the five board members are Americans. They have data that currently Oracle is managing in Texas. As you mentioned earlier to Congressman Turner, there have been reports in some cases that data has leaked and had access to people in China. No evidence publicly that the Chinese Communist Party has had it, but there has been evidence that they could have it in Chinese nationals. So pass a law, one, to prevent these apps, whether it's TikTok or Facebook or YouTube, for collecting data. That bill has been sitting in the House Commerce Committee for years, and it doesn't move. Second, pass a law that if there's any evidence that the data goes to China, then Oracle and TikTok would be held liable, civilly or criminally. Third, pass a law that if Chinese nationals are involved in the algorithms, people are claiming these algorithms are manipulating Americans. If there's any information, insight, evidence that a Chinese national or any foreign national is manipulating algorithms, that would be illegal.
And Congressman, I want to go back to the current bill. And if and your First Amendment concerns, what are those? I mean, if ByteDance divests, the app could continue to function in the U.S. So what is the First Amendment concern that you have cited?
Well, if the bill was a just divestment bill, I wouldn't have a problem with it. I mean, what the first role the government should have done is passed the privacy laws I'm talking about and had perhaps, say, facilitated these American investors to having a spinoff and having TikTok be U.S.-owned. We didn't do that. The two First Amendment concerns relate to the ban, which is the second part of the legislation. The court has said that you have to have the least restrictive approach when you have a compelling speech interest. Here you have a speech interest of 170 million Americans. I showed several less restrictive approaches than a ban. The court has also said you need alternative means of communication with a group on TikTok. Now, you asked Congressman Turner, you said, well, what about these 170 million, many of these people, 224,000 have a livelihood. How are they going to communicate with the TikTok audience? And if you say, well, they could just go on some other social media app, well, those members of Congress haven't talked to the TikTok influencer creators because that's not how it works.
That's
the audience is very different.
You don't think that's possible?
I think it would be hard, and I don't think the Supreme Court would look at the audience and say, okay, you can just have people go onto a different app. But I certainly don't think it's least restrictive. And the point is, there's been no evidence right now. You'd have to have a compelling interest. What is the actual evidence that that you couldn't just pass a data privacy law or a law banning data going to a foreign country and get that done that way? And the frustration is that we haven't been able to pass these data privacy laws. I mean, it took 3 days to pass a sale and then, if not, ban on TikTok. And we haven't passed data privacy. We haven't passed laws to ban foreign interference. The app where there actually was foreign interference in my district or near my district was Facebook. We aren't tackling those issues. And then we've just passed this blanket TikTok.
Congressman, this passed overwhelmingly. Your other members of Congress must have heard something that alarmed them. Nothing alarmed you enough to want to pass this urgently.
No, it did. It did concern me, the data privacy.
I mean, what you're talking about would take a very long time.
No, I actually think it would be easier once we pass it. If we passed a law saying you can't transfer data, you can't collect data, that would actually solve the problem. And by the way, there's so many data brokers who are sending information to China. This law does nothing to them. It does nothing in terms of other social media apps that are collecting data and maybe transferring data. And now this one of the concerns that people were citing is, well, there's a lot of folks who have pro-Palestine viewpoints on TikTok. Well, there are pro-Palestine viewpoints on Instagram and Facebook, and all it takes is to go to a college campus and realize that that demographic has more sympathy to the innocent loss of life in Gaza. I'm not saying they're right.
Congressman,
that doesn't mean that's evidence of manipulation.
Briefly, because of course you are campaigning for Biden and Harris. We've seen a significant share of primary voters back uncommitted over President Biden supporting Israel in the war on Gaza. What do you say to them?
I say, first of all, Hamas committed a brutal terrorist attack on October 7th. The UN found evidence that there was rape and sexual assault. We need to unambiguously condemn that October 7th attack. And then I say that President Biden now and his team are shifting and understanding that Netanyahu's policies have not been in the interests of protecting civilian life, that too many innocent civilians have died. And he has finally called for a ceasefire with the release of hostages, and they're being heard. Now, it's obvious that I have had disagreements with President Biden on this, but here's what I know. At least he's listening. Donald Trump wouldn't listen.
Okay, thank you so much for joining us this morning. We much appreciate it. Coming up, you've probably heard of them. You may be one of them, the so-called double haters. Those voters not exactly thrilled with the two presidential nominees this year. My conversation with a group from Virginia on what they will do come November. We're back in 2 minutes.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer.
We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table. Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view. The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
It is now up to Donald Trump to earn the votes of those in our party and beyond it who did not support him. And I hope he does that. At its best, politics is about bringing people into your cause, not turning them away. And our conservative cause badly needs more people. This is now his time for choosing.
That was Nikki Haley as she exited the race after Super Tuesday with a message to former President Trump. But many Americans have made clear they don't want former President Trump or President Biden. A New York Times Siena poll out earlier this month showed nearly 1 in 5 voters are unhappy with the presumptive nominees. But these so-called double haters could very well determine who wins in November. We sat down with 3 Virginia voters who expressed that discontent to see where they might ultimately put their support. It's your voice, your vote.
So I classify myself as a Republican.
I would probably classify myself as an independent.
And I would classify myself as a Republican.
52-year-old Elisa Baker was on Nikki Haley's Virginia leadership team. Now, she isn't sure where she'll put her support.
What could change, Elisa, in these next few months? What are you looking for?
I think what's really hard for me right now is that both candidates that are now the presumptive nominees are really locked in a battle against each other, that are both fighting grievances, re-adjudicating a past battle. I don't have a candidate right now that's talking about our challenges and our problems as a nation and as a world. I need to hear that.
When you look at your own voting record, 2016, Donald Trump?
Yeah.
2020?
Oh boy, 2020. Standing there at the booth with the ballot in front of me, trying to give myself a pep talk. And then walking away from the ballot with a blank ballot.
Couldn't vote for Donald Trump again.
Couldn't vote for either candidate. Really struggling with the why do I have to keep voting for the lesser of two evils? We deserve better than that.
You had voted for Trump in the past, though.
Yes.
What was it that turned you away?
2016 Trump, 2020 Trump, 2024 Trump are very different people.
What's different about 2024 Trump?
A lot of people that have worked for him in the past say they won't come back. Obviously, January 6th happened. A lot of indictments have happened. And to be honest with you, I don't know that he wants my vote. Or those of us that supported Nikki Haley, has been pretty clear.
That was a turnoff to you when he said that.
You know, I believe that the Republican Party should be a big tent. I think when we compromise, we get to the best solutions. So yeah, when you want to be an exclusive club, that's a problem.
This is the first time 21-year-old Nick Gamble can cast a ballot in a presidential race. But after voting for Nikki Haley on Super Tuesday, his enthusiasm for the general election is lacking.
You don't really know who you're going to vote for.
I know who I'm not going to vote for.
Who are you?
I will not vote for Donald Trump. I can't associate myself with the Republican Party under Donald Trump. I agree wholeheartedly. The Trump we're seeing now is a completely different Trump than Trump of 2016 and even 2020. He's running a campaign strictly for revenge. I think he poses a clear threat to our democracy, our institutions. So the two options for me are either Biden, write-in.
And what about those people who would say if you do a write-in, then you might as well have voted for Donald Trump?
I disagree because if we have to choose between the lesser of two evils, and that's getting old, and I think if more people write in a name, it kind of shows that there is a dissatisfaction. I think a protest vote is a vote a perfectly valid vote in and of itself.
So you're a college student. You voted for Haley. What is the vibe on your college campus?
People are excited about the election, but I think it's more so in opposition to Donald Trump. But there are also the voices who are more far to the left, who aren't supportive of Joe Biden, mainly because of his support for Israel.
Elmehdi Marhum sat out Super Tuesday. He says as a Muslim Republican, he doesn't feel either candidate has earned his community's support.
I mean, you are the kind of voters who people say, well, if you don't vote for so-and-so, the race is so close, the other guy will win. That doesn't enter your mind.
When we pledge allegiance to the United States of America, not to the Republican or to the Democrats. So being a Republican, it doesn't mean that I have to vote against my community. There were issues with my community, like the Muslim ban and all the things of a kind that my community felt that is not appropriate. But I feel like Biden still did not fulfill what I think he was supposed to fulfill.
Marhum is frustrated by President Biden's support for Israel in its war against Hamas. According to the Hamas-run health ministry, more than 30,000 Palestinians have been killed in Israel's response to the October 7th Hamas attack. But Marhum also points to Donald Trump's executive order banning nearly all travelers from five majority Muslim nations as a point of concern.
As a Muslim American, that sounds like a single issue voter. That's more important to you than any other issue.
We had a lot of hate toward the community. We had a Muslim ban, so it's not a single issue. It was more of like a safety perspective. It was all the things that affected us as Muslims. But that rhetoric of going on against the Muslim community over and over makes us, as a community, not voting for either one of the two.
But Marhum says he's still open to backing Trump. He wants to organize a town hall with Trump and Virginia Muslims.
If that town hall happens, I'm going to be a pro-Trump for sure. If that town hall doesn't happen, now I'm going to go back and look at policies, look at the best of the two evils. What's going to affect my community? Because keep in mind, each one of us vote based on our communities.
Is there anything that could get you to vote for Joe Biden?
I don't think so. There is no way for me to vote for Biden, Joe Biden. I think it's up to President Trump to win our vote.
If you had to vote today, Nick, who would it be?
Joe Biden.
I wish No Labels had announced something.
Same. I wish No Labels has announced something.
Is there a possibility you won't vote?
There is a possibility you won't vote if the thing stays as it is and the hate speech going on. So probably he's going to leave it blank.
Right now, probably. Yeah, and I hate that choice because that's not a good choice. That's not the way it should be.
Sounds like you wouldn't stay home.
No, I don't plan on staying home. I'll be voting. Begrudgingly, but I'll be voting.
And on that note, we have so much to get to with our powerhouse roundtable, former DNC chair Donna Brazile, former Justice Department spokesperson Sarah Isgard, New Yorker staff writer Susan Glasser, and ABC News political director Rick Klein. And I'm going to start with you, Rick Klein. Walk us through this. These are the voters who could decide the election.
Yeah, and consistently in polling, we've seen about 19-20%, one in five Americans who say they don't like either one of these two men who are running. So that can mean a couple of different things. Some of them are Democrats, some of them Republicans, some of them may come home. Some of them are going to flirt with third-party candidacies, whether it's No Labels or RFK Jr. Exactly. But what the Biden campaign is looking at in those numbers, and they've seen it in a couple of polls recently, is that when you really press these voters, who are you going to vote for, one or the other, Biden has an edge now among those voters. It gets even wider if it comes down to it is a binary choice, Biden versus Trump. So that's the effort that the Biden campaign is going to engage in as much as anything else, because these are the voters. Think about what it means to have 20% of Americans in an election that's going to be settled by 1 or 2 points in a whole bunch of battleground states. They could easily be the deciders, and they also may be late deciders. So that means that we could be in a campaign that really doesn't get any more clarity for a long while.
And you saw the Nikki Haley voters there, Sarah. Former President Trump hasn't exactly reached out to them or offered any sort of olive branch.
No, that's exactly right. And, you know, this is now the exhausted majority that we're talking about. It's the long run of negative polarization where campaigns aren't pitching you on their guy. They're saying, you vote for us because you hate the other guy, and let me tell you why. It's driven small dollars. It's driven partisan media business models. And in the end, it's weakened the two parties, and it's pulling this 20% or so of Americans outside of the two-party system in a way that's frankly unsustainable for the two parties. You're not going to be able to do this much longer. Whether they come home, what they do this time around, especially for those Nikki Haley voters, absolutely will be deciding in states like Georgia and Arizona.
And Donna, let's talk about campaigning this week. President Biden went to five battleground states. Is anything resonating?
Absolutely. Look, the fact is that the president understands to reach those voters, as well as many of the Democrats who are now feeling a little underwhelmed, he has to go and see them. He has to talk to them. He has to touch them. And I think the more he visits these so-called battleground states and other states to deliver the stronger message on the economy, on what he's doing on national security, he will reassure them that he is up to finish the job. And more importantly, he has delivered for the American people.
And Susan, you had a piece this week about how people aren't really listening at this point to Donald Trump. You heard one of those voters saying things are different. This is a different campaign than 2020, a different Donald Trump. We obviously heard what he said last night.
Yeah, I mean, look, Donald Trump, it seems to me, it's very hard 8 years into this. We still struggle with how to cover him as journalists. But in a way, the unhinged, rambling rants that you see from the former president of the United States are baked in. And I think, in a way, we are all desensitized and inured to the extraordinary, remarkable, and very, at times, un-American and threatening things that the former president is saying. I'm not saying it's easy to understand how to cover it, but I think we have to cover it. When the former president, who's already incited violence among his followers, says that there's going to be a bloodbath after the election, if he does not win, he is telling us what he is going to do.
Let me just disagree a little, because I'm having super 2016 deja vu over the bloodbath news cycle. This is what Donald Trump does. We're sitting here talking about a word that he used that 4 days ago we were all using to talk about what happened at the RNC that's in headlines about the markets on Wall Street. And now we're not talking about his 100% tariff policy, which is bonkers. We're talking about whether he used the word bloodbath to mean this or that, whether he means violence.
So what do you do, ignore it?
Oh, no, I think very much not. And look, I think the idea that one comment is going to change the minds of Trump voters, I think we've seen that before, to Sarah's point. We've long passed that news cycle. But the policies need to be focused on as well. And that's what the campaign is going to be and continues to be about.
I'm sorry, I just have to say something. Like, Donald Trump is attacking, in a broad brush sense, the basic pillars of American democracy. Period, full stop. If that's not news to you, it's not about tariffs. That's not the reason why millions of Americans are supporting Donald Trump. Let's be real about that. You have a Republican congressman who came on here today, and he can't even condemn in forthright, straightforward, honest terms the ransacking of the United States Capitol by thousands of Trump supporters. He says, well, you know, maybe there's some problems with that. Donald Trump opens his campaign rally, Sarah, by saying, these are martyrs, these are victims, these are heroes. His whole campaign now is being built around an alternate reality, by the way, constructed on an enormous number of lie after lie after lie. That's what he's peddling to the American people, not tariff policy. He's peddling an alternate reality vision of America that is built on lies. Let's be honest about that.
Do you see, Sarah, any difference between 2020 and 24? With Donald Trump, yes, he says a lot of outrageous things, but is there anything different? This may be how he's getting attention, but he does say those things.
He absolutely does, and he does it, by the way, to bring the attention back to him. Anytime we move on, he's going to say something. I think that a Trump 2.0 presidency is going to fall along some spectrum, and anyone who tells you that they know where on that spectrum a Trump second administration is going to be is not telling you the truth. And there's a version that's, you know, the dark world of Susan's, and there's a version that actually doesn't look that different than the first Trump administration. I don't think we know.
Martha?
Please, yes.
You know, I struggled in the middle of the night, and I shouldn't tell you what I do in the midnight hour, but I was struggling trying to figure out how to deal with, you know, what I call the weekly sermons of Donald Trump. Because, you know, Dr. Maya Angelou said that hope and fear cannot exist, occupy the same space. You have to invite one to stay. Donald Trump represents fear. And that's why he uses it as an emotion, and that's why it's so compelling for us to talk about
and
it.
And Rick, it works.
Yes. It works,
the bottom line.
It works in firing up a base and getting voters to support him. There's also ample evidence that people don't remember the bad parts of the Donald Trump years. And that, to me, is what the campaign is going to be about. If the campaign is just about Joe Biden, guess what? Biden is not getting a lot more popular. He's certainly not getting younger. But if the campaign is prosecuting a case against Trump, and that's what a lot of money and a lot of energy is going to be spent doing, then people might have different perceptions. But the fact that Trump's approval rating, people remember it differently now, he's higher than it ever was when he was actually president, tells you that. And I know Biden folks hate that amnesia that has set in with a lot of Americans in their view. And again, that's why the campaign plays out. They have 7 months to kind of make that case.
And very quickly, Pence did not endorse Donald Trump.
I got to say, I was surprised by that. I was. I thought he would land where Mitch McConnell did and where a whole range of other Republicans, even if it's a begrudging, look, of course, I'm going to vote for him versus anyone else. Pence is not saying who's going to vote for. But that, to me, does speak loudly. To your point about the Haley voters in Virginia and elsewhere, there's still work that has to get done. It's not about endorsements, but it's about convincing them that, yeah, there's still a home for them in a party that looks so different.
Okay, we have lots more to talk about. The roundtable will be back later in the program to discuss the rest of the week's news. But up next, White House National Security Communications Advisor John Kirby on the latest in Gaza.
The first ever criminal trial of a former president is underway in Manhattan. It's one of potentially four trials facing former President Trump as he makes his third bid for the White House. What do voters think about his culpability, and would a guilty verdict make a difference in the election? I'm Galen Druk, and every Monday and Thursday on the 538 Politics podcast, we break down the latest news from the campaign trail. We sort through the noise and zoom in on what really matters, using data and research as we go. That's 538 Politics every Monday and Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Felt the cartridge.
What were you thinking that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much unknown.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia. Wednesday night at 10, 9 central on ABC.
Prime Minister Netanyahu has lost his way by allowing his political survival to take the precedence over the best interests of Israel. He has been too willing to tolerate the civilian toll in Gaza. I believe a new election is the only way to allow for a healthy and open decision-making process about the future of Israel.
He made a good speech, and I think he expressed a serious concern. Shared not only by him, but by many Americans.
Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, the highest-ranking Jewish leader in U.S. history, with harsh words for Benjamin Netanyahu as Schumer calls for new elections in Israel. I'm joined now by White House National Security Communications Advisor John Kirby. Good to see you here, John. Let's start with Chuck Schumer's speech. President Biden called it a good speech, and yet he has not sided with Chuck Schumer in calling for new leadership in Israel.
Well, because the president understands that that's up to the Israeli people. That's up to the Israeli government that they elect to determine whether and how, if there's going to be new elections, what that would look like.
Well, Senator Schumer also understands that. He's just calling for new elections. And you've seen polling about Israelis that they would like new leadership as well.
Well, again, that's going to be up to them to determine. It's a democratic country, and we have to respect their sovereignty. In the meantime, he is the prime minister of Israel. They are two leaders that have had a long working relationship. They don't agree on everything. We don't agree on everything with respect to what's going on in Gaza. But that's the government that is in place, and that's the government, the war cabinet, that we're going to continue to work with.
The president wants a temporary ceasefire,
yes,
a Palestinian state, a two-state solution, a peace agreement, and has asked Netanyahu not to move in to Rafah. He has defied all that. So what more can you do?
Well, they haven't moved into Rafah yet.
They've said they have their war plans.
They have. We've not seen those plans. And as we've said before, Martha, we would not support such an operation unless or until they can accommodate the 1.5 million refugees that are there and preserve their safety and security. We have continued and will continue to press the Israelis to do more to reduce civilian casualties, to do more to get more trucks in, and to again, help us come to closure on this temporary ceasefire so that we can get all those hostages out.
As you mentioned, the Israeli War Cabinet approved its plan for Rafah. You said you haven't seen it. But President Biden at one point said that was a red line for him and then kind of walked that back. He said it's a red line. It's not a red line. What is it?
It's no different.
If they go in the same way they've been going in other places, if they don't move those refugees, and I don't know where they'd move them.
Well, again, I don't want to get ahead of where we are. They haven't moved into Rafah. I would just reiterate what the president has said many times. We would not support such an operation unless or until they've got a credible, executable plan to take care of the 1.5 million refugees that have been pushed into Rafah because of operations in Khan Yunis to the north and Gaza City even further to the north. Now, the Israeli Defense Forces say that they have such a plan for an evacuation. They talked about humanitarian islands in Gaza. Again, we'd welcome the opportunity to see that, to see if that's actually executable and doable.
And give us the status on that floating dock and how long you think that might take and how they do it without putting boots on the ground at all, connecting it somehow.
In Pentagonese, this is called JLOTS, Joint Logistics Over the Shore. It's a temporary pier, a floating dock, if you will, that is transported in pieces. The first pieces of it are on the way now. They left Norfolk just a little bit earlier this week. It's going to probably take about 6 to 8 weeks or so for all the pieces to get in place and for it to become operational. We are working with partners in the region to figure out the details of how the material will be secured on and off the floating dock and, of course, how it will be distributed inside Gaza.
And I want to move to Ukraine. House Speaker Mike Johnson says he expects to pass Ukraine aid with support from Democrats as a standalone bill or combined with aid to Israel. Did the president speak directly with Speaker Johnson about this, and how does he feel about that?
Well, he's already spoken to Speaker Johnson now a couple of times.
Specifically about that.
But I don't know of any conversations that the president has had. I know that we have been in touch. The White House has been in touch with Speaker Johnson and his team about this moving forward. Look, time is of the essence, and you were in Ukraine not long ago. They are running out of ammunition in the Donbass, and they are falling back now on second and third lines of defense as the Russians continue to try to push west. They've got to have the support, and we need it now.
Do you worry at all about our own readiness as we give weapons to Ukraine?
Sure.
Has that been an issue?
Oh, of course. But since the beginning of the war, we've had to, with every package we provided, we've got to make a certification that it's not going to damage our own national security. And as we have given more and depleted our inventories, We have been doing everything we can to work with the defense industry to restock, to replenish. That's what this replenishment authority, why that's so important. So, yes, it's a concern. We haven't reached a point yet where our own national security and our own operational plans have been jeopardized. But it's absolutely something you can't ever take your eye off.
And we've been talking about TikTok a lot this morning and that bill. They talk about national security. I mean, that's clearly a concern. If this bill doesn't pass in the Senate, what will the president do to assuage those concerns?
Difficult to know exactly where this is going to go. As you rightly said, this is a legislative process. We'll see where it goes in the Senate. We're glad the House took it up, and we urge the Senate to move swiftly on this. I want to stress again, over and over, that this isn't about a ban. We don't want to see a ban on TikTok. We understand there's a lot of people whose economic life...
But it could ultimately become a ban.
It could, but we don't want to see it banned. We do want to see ByteDance no longer in control of that application. We want to see divestiture from this Chinese company because we are concerned, as every American ought to be concerned, about data security and what ByteDance and what the Chinese Communist Party could do with the information that they can glean off of Americans' use of the application.
And I know we're kind of going around the world here, but I do want you to give us an update on the crisis in Haiti.
Yeah, more violence over the weekend so far. Very, very concerning. We do see the political process moving forward. There was a terrific meeting in Jamaica. Secretary Blinken represented the United States where Haitian-led, Haitian groups came together and decided on this transitional presidential council to appoint an interim prime minister. It looks like that process is moving forward, so that's a good thing. On the other front, we are continuing to work with the Kenyans about getting this military support mission in place to help the Haitian National Police. There's an awful lot going on there in the United States. We continue to watch this very, very closely.
Okay, thanks so much for joining us this morning. Always great to see you. The roundtable takes on the politics of Gaza and how it could impact the 2024 race. We're back in just a moment. And the roundtable is back. And Susan Glasser, I want to turn to you. The Democrats have not been shy about criticizing Prime Minister Netanyahu, but quite a remarkable moment seeing Chuck Schumer.
Yeah, I have to say, for Schumer, who is a career supporter of Israel, who has had his entire identity really as being, you know, a leader of Jewish Democrats in America, this is almost a breakpoint moment. I think it suggests just, you know, that might be the speech that many in the Biden White House themselves would have liked to give right now. The frustration, I feel, is palpable. It is hurting Democrats politically inside their own party right now. And I think they're concerned that despite all the support for Israel, they don't have the leverage that they thought that they had at the beginning of this conflict.
And Donna, you heard John Kirby and you've heard the president say it was a good speech, but they're not committing to anything.
Well, look, I think Chuck Schumer was speaking on behalf of millions of Americans who are very frustrated in how Israel is conducting its campaign to eliminate Hamas. I think most Americans would like to see the hostages freed, including the Americans who are still being held captive. And they want Israel to really focus and target on the elimination of these militant terrorists and not the innocent civilians.
And Rick, what was highlighted this week, and we said this before, is this uncommitted that got nearly 10% of the vote in Washington state primary.
Yeah.
And that's, a lot of that is about Gaza.
Oh, yeah, that's what's driving this. And to the extent that there's any problems for Joe Biden inside his own party and his own primary, it is driven primarily right now by that. And I think it's so telling. Remember, after the State of the Union, the hot mic that picks up Joe Biden saying we're going to have that come to Jesus moment with Netanyahu. It feels to me like
you think he really knew that mic wasn't hot.
Well, you think he really didn't know that Chuck Schumer was going to go out there, a Jew, the top ranking Jew in American history, to begin to bring Bibi to Jesus. I feel like that's an important moment. Well, I think Susan's right. It's a signal moment for the Democratic Party.
And one of the things I think Chuck Schumer probably is worried about is how this generation of Americans and Americans in general will start to view Israel, and that could be a real change. And Sarah, the person we haven't heard a whole lot about on the war is Donald Trump. He did say that Israel must finish the problem in Gaza. What do you think that means? And he really has not been pinned down on this.
Remember, Donald Trump's policy is a lot more personality driven than it is philosophically driven. Netanyahu, I think, made a huge mistake by making himself a partisan figure in the United States and aligning himself with Republicans and with Trump and really against the Democratic Party. It's interesting, in Israel, the only polling that shows Netanyahu is being popular is Netanyahu's poll. Every other poll shows that Netanyahu is an incredibly unpopular figure in Israel, same as he's becoming in the United States. I think Donald Trump is sitting back both to see what happens to Netanyahu and also, as the Democrats become less friendly to Israel, watch Donald Trump become more friendly in reaction.
And any third parties are saying, we'll enter.
Well, that's exactly right. Look, the bottom line is that Netanyahu's interest, in a way, politically speaking, is to prolong the war. And right now, that's a direct conflict with the Democrats and Joe Biden, who need the war to be over yesterday.
And could they do more? Do you think the administration could do more? We got it. About 15 seconds.
Look, the aid that you're seeing by air, by sea, is not enough in any way for the humanitarian crisis. They didn't do that up until now. Then when political necessity forced them to, they said, fine, we're going to do it. There needs to be a lot more aid. And I think there are many more steps that the Biden administration can take to distance from Netanyahu.
The U.S. is trying to get that aid in there. Thanks. It's all great to see you this morning. Happy St. Patrick's Day. We'll be right back. And that's all for us today. Thanks for sharing part of your Sunday with us. Check out World News tonight and have a great St. Patrick's Day.
More Americans choose ABC News, America's number one news source.
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Built the cartridge.
What were you thinking at that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much unknown.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia. Wednesday night at 10, 9 central on ABC.